All right, welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on QR Calgary and More Than Money. Faisal, there's been some discussion recently about whether or not the RIF rules that were put in place a number of years ago are reflective of today's day and age, returns, longevity, how long people are living, and their financial needs over time. And I think we should discuss some of the proposed changes, at least that are being put forward, as they may affect what the rules are going to look like in the future.
Yeah, so at 71 years of age, you have the ability to convert your RSP into a retirement income fund. We call it a RIF. And then the government has a mandate of the minimum amount that you have to take out every single year.
Yep.
It's based upon your age or your spouse's age, and it's based on the value of your RSPs on December 31st of the previous calendar year. So there's a calculation that happens here. And there's a lot of times where people are like, I have to take this out. Will this money last as long as I need it to? So on and so forth. And so that's, on occasion we hear people come back and say, this is not the right timing for the rules. We need to change them. We need to adjust it. And so we're back at this again. And I think we do need to revamp the rules. I think there needs to be a good conversation about that. And we've got a great guest who's brought that forward as well.
That's right. So Bill Robson, CEO of the CD Howe Institute. Bill, first of all, thanks for joining us on the show. We appreciate you taking some time with us.
My pleasure to be here. And let's hope it's a productive conversation and that we give the government some ideas as well as your listeners.
So let's start at a high level. Just tell us a little bit about the thesis about why you believe, or the CD Howe Institute believes, that the RIF rules are out of date and need to be revamped.
I'll start with the very biggest picture comment, really, which is that there's a framework in place right now, which you were just describing, Faisal, about when you have to convert your RRSP or your DC pension into a RIF and then have to start running it down. And I do want to say right at the beginning that it's not obvious why we would have any of these rules at all. Why would you not, for example, allow a person to stop saving and start drawing down when that person wants, or even reverse field, because people's circumstances change if you decided that you wanted to put more in after having started to draw down? What would be wrong with that? Why not allow people complete flexibility about when they bring their tax-deferred savings into income? We're so used to the framework that exists right now that it seems like quite a radical thing to pose that question. But I think we should start there, partly simply because the government is immortal. One of the reasons we have these rules is because they're impatient for revenue. And there have been times when the federal government had big deficits and unsustainable debt. Well, arguably they do right now, but they don't seem very concerned about it, right? Like in many areas. Why be impatient for revenue if you're immortal? The RIF holder isn't immortal. To a person who's running his or her retirement savings down, timing matters a lot. So I did want to just start with that, because we're going to focus most of the time, I think, on the rules that exist right now and how they might change and how they should change. But one of the options would be to simply get rid of this entire regime and give people a whole lot more freedom. And that would be my starting place, because people are different. It's any time you've got a set of ages out there and a formula out there that imposes a one-size-fits-all on all retirement savers and then all seniors when they're drawing their incomes down, you're always going to have people for whom it just doesn't make sense. So I'll just start with that. That's why we have the current regime. That's why at age 71, you have to stop saving and then you have to start drawing it down, as you were just describing, with these minimum mandatory withdrawals. You don't actually need to have any of that. I don't think we're going to get very far arguing, that would be kind of a nice kind of, let's hold that up as an ideal. And then the more you deviate that from that with these restrictions and these forced conversion dates and so on, the more conscious you have to be that as you put those rules in place, there are going to be people for whom they just don't make sense.
So let's go into the changes you'd like to see. What are the key changes you'd like to see going forward, given the rules that we have now?
Well, if you're going to have a set of ages at which you have to stop saving and start drawing down, and if you're going to have some kind of withdrawal schedule, I think that the purchasing power of those withdrawals over time is really a key thing to focus on. If you were able to buy, and if you're a federal public servant or an MP, you do get an indexed annuity. If you were able to go with your RRSP savings and buy an annuity at an attractive price, ideally, but that would give you a level payment for the rest of your life in real terms, so indexed to inflation, that would be a very attractive thing for a lot of people. I think that's probably the right benchmark to be thinking of. As it turns out, and I don't think it's a total accident, when the framework that we now have in broad strokes, the conversion age of 71 and a mandatory minimum withdrawal schedule, when that first came into being in the early 1970s, in the 1990s, the payments that you would get out of a RIF with those minimum drawdown requirements as they existed then, and with returns on the assets in the RIF, what they were then, it wasn't too far off that. You had reasonable sustainability in real terms until you got well into your 90s, and then it went off a cliff because the drawdown schedule becomes far more aggressive. You got to go 20% a year until it runs out. But the reason I mention it is because it wasn't too far off that kind of a situation where you had those level payments. Two key reasons for liking that kind of level payment in real terms. First, it's a pretty good compromise between, you know, some seniors do spend a lot less as they get older, and a lot of people will say, well, that's why you should have a drawdown schedule that does provide less money, because we just do fewer things as we get older. But there's another side to it entirely, which is that many people, as they get into their more advanced years, they have bigger expenses, you know, long-term care, things that you might not be able to get from the Medicare system. The way to saw that off is just to say, well, let's try and make sure that it doesn't go all over the place. And then another key thing is taxes. If you've got a level payment in real terms over time, you're less likely to have years when, and this would be true with a very front-loaded regime like we have now, where you're paying higher taxes because you're in a higher tax bracket. And then as time goes by, your tax rate falls. But a person who had a level payment and had the same cumulative income in retirement might pay a lower tax rate because they were never in that higher situation. I'll also add, because many people do take these drawdowns as kind of like a guide to what you should do. This is what the government is mandating, so therefore it's probably a sensible withdrawal schedule. If you're a person who's taking that view of it, that kind of level thing over time is a lot better than what happens now, because now returns are a lot lower, people are living longer, and that kind of level payment scenario is way in the past. Now, if you look at the purchasing power of a typical person who is in retirement drawing down a RIF, it goes down quite steadily over time, and then it goes off a cliff. And that's just no kind of schedule for anybody to be using as kind of like, this is what I should do. It's what the government forces you to do, but it's not the ideal thing by any means.
I think what we find is that these types of programs get put into place, then they get parked, and no one really gets the opportunity to revisit and actually make adjustments. I think the ideas that the CD Howe Institute has brought forward are great ideas that need to have that discussion. Going right at the very beginning of why the heck do we even need a withdrawal rate at all? Why don't we just let people have that flexibility to figure out their own lives? I think that's a great starting point there. And I think one key thing that we need to have that discussion is, whenever we set a program in like this from a financial perspective, I think government should have a mandate to review it, get public opinion, get analysis done every 3 to 5 years or whatever that time frame is, so that we're always up to date. Because like Bill was saying, things that were happening in the early 1990s with interest rates being double digits are completely different when they're at 1, 2, 3, 4% interest, and annuity rates are different, and longevity is different. Healthcare is different, structure of what you're going to be spending your money on is different. All these different issues that come up require an ongoing review. You know, Bill, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This was some great insight. We definitely hope that all the politicians that do listen to our show can actually take some of this and send it forward, so we can actually get some we can move forward from it, going forward. Thank you so much for joining us today, Bill.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Join us for our seminar on Tuesday, May 23rd, 7 p.m. This will be in person at the Silver Springs Golf and Country Club. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
If you're interested in aging at home, we've got a new option for you. Stick around after the break for discussion on that. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.